Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here on The Mark Steiner Show. Reminding you, on our way to this conversation, The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ Baltimore's Credit Union, offering its members and its community full range of financial services. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org is MeQ Baltimore Credit Union's banner. We're here with Kalima Young, instructor at Towson University, University of Maryland College Park, co-host and guest host here on The Mark Steiner Show, and Hannah Brancato, artist, activist, co-founder of Force Upsetting Rape Culture, and professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art. Good to have you both in the studio.
Thanks for having us, Mark.
Thanks for having us.
And y'all can join 410-319-8888. And write to us here, talk@steinershow.org, and tweet us at Mark Steiner. So, Kalima, let me just set you lead off here.
Oh, for real? Okay.
And we've all been following the different stories that have been in the press lately. What's the clown's name? Brad Turner?
Brock Turner. Brock Turner, who just got released from his sentence.
Who raped a woman who was unconscious, mm-hmm. and in college, and was given a 6-month sentence where he served some of his evenings in jail because mm-hmm. the judge didn't want him to miss college.
Right.
And now, after 3 months, has been released.
Right.
From any of that.
Right. We have cases like that have come up. To me, it seems like whenever we have a conversation that is about sexual violence and rape, it seems to be in a campus environment. So the things that rise to the top, the things that make the national headlines, are assaults that occur on college campuses. And often a lot of the narrative that we're seeing right now that's in the media, and thankfully so, are about young men on college campuses who participate in sexual violence and who end up receiving light sentences or are let off. And because this conversation is so elevated, it's serving an interesting dual purpose in our discussions around rape culture. On one, it's highlighting specific attention to a series of cases that continue to occur. On the other hand, it also obscures the fact that sexual violence manifests in a number of different ways and often manifests in ways before people even get to college. So, and that's one of the things that I thought would be interesting for us to grapple with today in the studio, is that sort of dual use of this conversation around campus rape and rape culture.
Yeah, I think that like one of the benefits of the campus, the anti-sexual assault movement that's been happening on campuses is that there's a lot of attention that's being paid to student activists who are survivors themselves. And then I think that the danger of it is that we begin to only associate a term like rape culture with college campuses, when in fact rape culture is something that permeates everywhere. College campus is a really good example because actually something I wanted to talk about is that rape culture, sometimes people think of it as very amorphous and like hard to and intangible, but in fact it's related to structural and institutional backings of sexual violence, not mm-hmm. supporting survivors, not holding rapists accountable. And so campuses are a great example of where that's happening, but mm-hmm. certainly it's not the only place where that's happening, and you actually don't need to look any farther than Baltimore to understand.
What do you mean, look any further
so
than
looking
Baltimore?
At the Department of Justice report, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the Department of Justice report, the fact that sexual assault survivors are not taken seriously by our police officers, mm-hmm. perfect example of rape culture, right? So I actually heard a really interesting story from a college student here in Baltimore who said that their Title IX coordinator shared in the orientation, if you don't like how our campus deals with sexual assault, then you can also prosecute through the Baltimore City Police Department. But what kind of an alternative is that when the report that students are reading is that, you know, survivors are not taken seriously by our police department?
And not to leave it on campuses, but I mean, that is where it seems to come to light a lot, as you were saying, you know, mm-hmm. whether it was the recent incident at UMBC.
Mm. Yes.
Or what happened at Morgan State University here last year on this campus. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones just that are highlighted.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, and so students don't come to college and then learn this when they get to school.
Right.
It doesn't. It's not something that becomes like I've decided to become a rapist 101. I mean,
right.
This is.
Right. This is a part of an entire culture. And, you know, when we're talking about rape culture, I know I've defined it before on the air, but when we're talking about rape culture, we're talking about the way that we trivialize, make invisible, make commonplace sexual violence in our culture, and the way that we talk about it and the way that we address it and the way that we obscure the different ways sexual violence manifests in the world. So when we're talking about rape culture, young people, we're all inundated with rape culture well before we step onto a college campus.
And maybe survivors before we step foot on a college campus. And this is something I want to give credit to Angela Wharton. So she's the founder of Phoenix Ministries, which is like a survivor support group here in Baltimore, faith-based. Yeah. And, you know, she came and spoke for like an orientation here at Morgan State maybe last year, the year before. And something that she shared with me is these college freshmen are not coming here not understanding. And in fact, many of them have already been assaulted. Many of them are already survivors, right? It starts much earlier. So, you know, we have to talk about prevention in high school, in middle school. We have to begin talking about consent much earlier than in college.
Well, I mean, there's a... What I was thinking about the other day a lot around this issue, I was thinking about Nate Parker and the man who created Nat Turner. And I know that some people say they don't want to see this movie. I still want to see this movie, and the guy, I forget the guy who was his partner in the film...
What's his name? Celestine.
Yeah, it'll come to us in a minute. But so, at any rate,
sorry.
So what it said to me was, is that how casually we think of the issue as men. That it is and I think that men have to really kind of wrestle with this, and we have this word rape culture, and that always I don't disagree with using the term, but it sets off this alarm bells, and people oppose it immediately,
right?
Just like people oppose Black Lives Matter immediately when they hear the word Black Lives Matter,
right?
Not people, but many people do. And to me, part of it is that because it is, you have brilliant creative people like Nate Parker,
right,
who brings us a story that I think is incredibly important for our nation to wrestle with.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But people like Nate Parker or Mark Steiner or any other people we can name in this world grow up thinking that that is our right and privilege as men to do as we will with women.
Right, right.
And I think that that's the stuff that we have to begin to challenge.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, men always joke and guffaw about women and their bodies. And in some ways, that's a natural thing, but in some ways, it becomes unnatural and dangerous. And I think we have to really kind of start talking about what that, why we are this way and what we have to do. And you talked about schools, Anna.
Yeah.
And I think in some ways, it's about school, but it's also about a larger sense of our society and world society, about how we have to begin to think differently about who we are as human beings.
Right. Well, we don't learn, you know, we don't necessarily really learn about sex in school. I mean, there's sex ed and that's important.
Yeah, that's
but where
right,
do you
right.
really learn about sex? Not right. in the classroom, right?
Right.
And so,
right.
and actually, so I think that the way that these attitudes are taught going all the way back is really important. And I think it's interesting, actually, that you said, well, the way that people joke about sex, like some of it's natural and some of it isn't. So, you know, actually, maybe like a lightness about sex is perfectly natural and that's a beautiful thing. But sex is so demonized in the culture that we live in that it turns into this objectification like almost automatically.
Right.
I was reading the interview in Ebony with Nate Parker.
Yeah, I was reading that this morning as well.
Yeah,
well,
and
yet,
something that I found really interesting. So he's like really grappling with stuff. He's like coming to terms. He's trying to like own up to, you know, the mistakes that he made and the messed up way that he responded, which I think is even better. Like actually to be able to own up to the fact that, wow, I responded to this wrong and I'm going to take responsibility for that. I'm learning. But then, you know, there's all these slippages like where he was talking about as soon as he had, as soon as he was a husband and father, that's when he started
to be
more sensitive
thinking,
to women's experience.
Oh, I need to pay attention to women's experience.
When he
I
has
have
some
male
kind of
privilege,
ownership over, you know, other women in his life, right? And so it's like there's all these like slippages and unconscious things that still are happening.
So when you say that, I mean, that's my wrestle with what you agreed with, what you just said.
You got to watch that happen.
so what, when we say slippages, and what he was saying, but isn't that part of growth? Isn't that part of the learning process? I mean, it might be real that he didn't think about this stuff till he fell in love with a woman And in his case, being heterosexual, fell in love, whatever that means, he fell in love with a woman, and made a life with her, and had these children, and then going, what the hell did I do? Who have I been? Why am I this way? Something's wrong with this. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's we can't yuck someone else's growth yum, right? We're all going to be on a path of understanding and unearthing and growing and the way that we see the world. I think it's interesting, though, that oftentimes people have to suddenly have something that they're going to protect in order for them to think about themselves, that you have to have some kind of feeling of ownership already that you need to take care of and usher before you can say, let me question and understand myself and what I'm bringing to the table. I want to protect my baby girl. Good. Protect your baby girl. But your baby girl is her own girl and her own body. You don't own people.
Right.
And it's this conversation of understanding that we are all living in our own houses and we have to be decent neighbors to one another. No one owns anybody's body. I don't care if you're a parent of a child. You don't own that child's body. They have their own
soul. But
you
do protect that body.
You protect their bodies. But they're still, of course, right? And I protect my cats and stuff too.
Differently than I would my children, but yes.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, they're my babies. They're my children. But
I hear that too.
But, you know, we have to have this conversation about ownership of bodies. And this goes back to the conversation about the lightness. Can we actually have a light dialogue about sex? If we stop demonizing sex and understand us all as sexual beings with sexual bodies and needs from a very early end, a very early age, we can begin to create a fundamental culture where we start respecting the bodily autonomy. And in a conversation of bodily autonomy, then we have a conversation about consent. Right. You know?
It's for all of the reasons that you're mentioning that I always bristle when people or when advertising will use the slogans like, she's somebody's daughter, she's somebody's sister, because you know what? She's also a person. And I think that that's right. The point that we have to get to. And then in terms of like kind of starting sooner, I know that you're going to have Ignacio Rivera on the show later for a longer conversation. But they are doing this amazing project where they're interviewing survivors of childhood sexual abuse about when did you learn about sex? Talk about when did you learn about sex? And it's kind of an incredible thing just to catalog those stories. And I'm sure that they can speak about it much more, you know, eloquently than I can. But I will say that I think it's a really important project that's out there and disrupting rape culture and, like, you know, getting us to really question some of these beliefs that we have all been, you know, raised with. So.
And another quick thing is I also... Oh, it's so easy for these conversations to be boiled down around the conversation of a woman as a victim and a man as the assailant. And I always want to bring it back and understand that everyone is impacted by sexual violence, that men are impacted by sexual violence, that non-gender conforming persons are impacted by sexual violence, folks on all different continuums and scales of identity. But it's just so easy to get smushed into the woman victim, male perpetrator. But we really have to talk about bodily autonomy across us as human beings, regardless of how we see gender or gender existing in it or not.
And that, just a quick thing, is that that does relate back to this question of a campus conversation versus should we be starting it earlier? Because the statistic is actually 1 in 6 men, 1 in 6 boys have been sexually assaulted before the age of 18. And if we understand survivorship as a lifelong experience, you don't get to some kind of endpoint as
a
survivor.
And then you're like, oh, I'm done.
Right. That's not the way that it works, right? So once a survivor, you're a survivor for your life. So anyway, you know, those voices of survivors are often very silenced in this conversation. And it's something that I think that all of us doing organizing around it, there's really a call to action to find a way to make more space for the even, you know, for the voices that are like very stigmatized, including men's.
Folks, step up, 410-319-8888. We'd like to hear your thoughts from this conversation we're having about rape culture, which will be a continuing conversation on this show over this next year as we continue to kind of really explore in depth our world of sexuality, our world of who we are by gender, our world of who we are by dominance, what rape means in this society, why it takes place from childhood to adulthood. Your own experiences are welcome by email and your thoughts on the radio or tweeting, however you feel comfortable doing it. And your own opposition, if you have an oppositional thought to what you're hearing, we want to hear that too. 410-319-8888. You can email us to talk@steinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Log on to our Facebook pages. But come on, 410-319-8888. Post-show, we had a lot of interesting comments from women who wrote about their experiences and thanked us for the conversations that we're trying to generate here.
Right, right. Many people talked about their experiences, that their experiences of sexual violence, sexual assault happened very early on in their lives and that they have not had an opportunity to actually talk about it. To actually grapple with it. Some people talked about how this gives them the opportunity to talk about family secrets and family histories, which, of course, brings me back to thinking about Nate Parker and the response of the Black community to this rape allegation and this and the invisibilized historical violence, sexual violence that exists within Black communities in general, and our conversations around whose stories get to be told, what are family secrets that we only know a little bit about, what are stories, why does it seem like it's a rite of passage for sexual violence to be a thing in many Black families and many Black lives. And watching how contorted the many people in the blogosphere, Black folks in the blogosphere, were around, do I support Nate Parker? Do I not support Nate Parker? How dare, is there a conspiracy that this is coming out right now, that his movie is coming out about Nat Turner, right? That it shows that we have a very complicated legacy and history within the Black community to talk about sexual violence and sexual histories, and that incidents like this bring up and bring to the forefront.
Your thoughts, 410-319-8888. Let's go to the phones. And Cornelius, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Steiner. I just want to say thank you for doing such an excellent job of bringing consciousness and intelligent conversation to the airways. I really respect you and your program.
Thank you.
I am the husband of, the cousin to, and the son of rape victims. And so this is a very delicate topic for me. It's a very frustrating topic. There's a sense of powerlessness when people that you love have been touched in an inappropriate way, and you get to see how that plays out in their lives as you interact with them and as you grow, and you see them grow from year to year. Also, in my case, the three assailants of my family members were never brought to justice, not so much as a phone call made. And so there's a lot of lingering grief and pain and what have you regarding those things. I am fully against the very short probation time that the young man got at the college campus. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a travesty. I think the short amount of time speaks to the judicial system and their lack of empathy for females in this society. I think it's sad that in almost 2017, we still have such a blatant disregard for human life, be it male or female. And I think it gives future perpetrators a reason to proceed more boldly than they normally would. I don't think anyone in this country is really setting an example of how to deal with sexual crimes on a consistent basis. And I think it's laughable to the public, the kind of small sentencing this man got. And I think it's laughable to people who are interested in perpetrating the crime themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's all I have to say.
I said a lot, Cornelius. I appreciate the call.
Yeah, thank you for sharing your story.
Very much.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, you touched on a lot. I mean, thinking about the way that perpetrators are brought to justice, mm-hmm. When the criminal justice system isn't working, we know that the criminal justice system also isn't a just system.
Right.
And so, what other paths to justice do survivors have? Like, having models for restorative and transformative justice are things that I think here in Baltimore we really need to be developing and looking at.
Right.
And one reference for folks that might be interested in that is the Bay Area Transformative Justice Collective, where they are really focused on community accountability. What does community accountability look like? It's not easy. It's something that, folks have to have a real commitment to. But I think that it's important that survivors don't only have one option that probably or maybe isn't going to work for them for justice. We need to have choices for justice.
Right. So many incidents of sexual violence happen within communities. It's people that you know. It's cousins, it's friends, it's family friends, it's uncles, it's parents. And what happens when you bring a carceral system, right, mm-hmm. into your lives? Like, so many young people don't speak up when they've been abused because that is a family member or someone that's close to them. What will that do to devastate their actual family in terms of, will they be placed into a system that isn't designed for them to thrive, i.e. foster care? Will their family be stripped of their benefits from welfare and social services? There are all of these complicated narratives that go along with what actual justice means. And I think that if we have more of a conversation about what justice means for survivors versus what justice means for our patriarchal system that says this is what punishment is, that we might begin to sort of shift the dialogue a bit around sexual violence in communities where justice isn't necessarily the legal system.
And I think what you're talking about touches on another thing that the caller brought up, empathy, right? Mm-hmm. We need to have more empathy for survivors in order to get to a place where we can hear what survivors actually want and need.
We had an email here from last time, and I was going to just read it now. They kind of wrote in that I was raped at 17 years old and was afraid to tell anyone, not only out of embarrassment, but also because I feared losing my freedom if my parents knew. I wrote her back, and she wrote this: the immediate impact of the rape was relatively minor. I dealt with the trauma pretty well, despite having had a knife to my throat. However, I later learned that I had contracted gonorrhea, which, although was treated pretty soon, kept me from conceiving for 3 years. And there's other emails I want to pull out, people who wrote post-show mm-hmm. to what we did last time.
Right.
And the question is how you do address this. I mean, you know, because my initial reaction to someone in my family being raped, and there have been a lot of rapes inside my family, mm-hmm. people, family members, men and women, mm-hmm. I will add. And your first reaction is I'm going to cut their throat.
Right.
That's my first reaction anyway.
You're so violent.
But then you know that you have to begin to think through what should happen here. Mm-hmm. And it's a really, I mean, I think that it goes so deep in the human psyche, which I said last time we were together. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is not an American problem.
No.
It's not a problem of capitalism. It's not just a problem. It's a problem of what our human societies have created over thousands of years.
Right. Right.
And it's unearthing that.
The ripples go deep. You know,
they go very deep.
One of the studies that I use a lot in some of the research stuff that I do is about the sexual abuse to prison pipeline, right?
Yeah.
And the study came out last year in the Human Rights Watch and Ms. Foundation, and it says that more than 80% of the girls in some states' juvenile detention centers suffered sexual and physical abuse before they were incarcerated, right? That so many people who are a part of the system now have experienced sexual abuse and sexual assault, that there's an actual sexual assault to prison pipeline for women, right? Early entry into prostitution, you know, after a history of sexual abuse that happens in families.
Addiction,
substance use, all of these ripples that these stories that need to come out and be heard and talked about, the connections that have to be made. Because, as you said, it goes back, it goes deep, and it's rooted. And there are certain systems in place that make it so that certain people remain victims of these inequities and inequalities.
I think the way, like, as force that we always talk about it is that, yes, we do need to figure out how to hold perpetrators accountable better, but first we have to learn how to listen to survivors, because the solutions for how to hold perpetrators accountable needs to be coming from survivors. And so, you know, in addition to the models for healing that we have where it's like the one-on-one therapy, those are really important resources, and we need to have other models as well. So the idea of, like, survivor-led activism, and actually, you know, I should mention that So FORCE has formed a survivor-led collective. It's called Gather Together, and we're working on public projects that center our own stories as survivors. We're actually having a poetry workshop tonight that's open to the public. So if this is something that speaks to folks, it's a resource that's available that you can come.
Where is that?
So the workshop's at Motorhouse. It's 120 West North Avenue, and there'll be a phone number posted on the door where people can come in. It's from 6 to 9 p.m. tonight, and it's part of a series. We're actually putting together a book of poetry with Turnaround. It's their 7th edition. They've been doing this every year. So, you know, the reason I mention this is that just that survivors need more venues for healing, but also that platforms for communities to be able to listen to them. And then we can get to those solutions. I think that if we bring a bunch of experts into the room and say, what can we do to better hold perpetrators accountable? We're going to end up recreating a lot of the same problems that we currently have.
Indeed. Let me open the phones, get some more callers in here. 410-319-8888. Yemma, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, thank you. From people as diverse as Roman Polanski, that's probably the incorrect pronunciation, who raped a 13-year-old.
Yes, that's right, Roman Polanski.
And they didn't think enough of the rape and what he did to send him back to stand trial. We currently have another director, producer of movies, who married his daughter. It was his adopted daughter, and has had children by her. And then the other daughter stood up and said, well, he raped me, too. We send mixed messages to our children about how we feel about rape, depending on whom that person is. Mm-hmm. And we need to look at that. And finally, I want to ask about an article which is in the paper this morning about a mother who came home, found a 31-year-old man in the bedroom with her 16-year-old daughter. She shot him. She got arrested. He didn't. Statutory rape. And finally, the conversations in high school about rape do not go into what is happening with you personally, what is happening with your, if a family member is abusing you, and what should you do if that is happening, because the system does not have enough social workers, does not have enough foster homes to move these children.
Appreciate that call, Yemma. The person we think of, Woody Allen's the other person that you were mentioning.
Right.
Roman Polanski is actually stuck.
Yeah, he can never come back.
He can never come back, and he's stuck in Poland, I think, is where he's stuck. Is that right?
I don't know where he's stuck, but he's still making movies.
But he's still making movies.
Yeah, and he's still getting Oscars.
Mm-hmm. We have a huge amount of empathy for perpetrators, right? amount of empathy for perpetrators. You're seeing that right now again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I think a lot of it, just thinking about the empathy for perpetrators, I think about some of the language that the judges have been using in these higher profile college cases. I don't want to ruin this person's college career. You shouldn't get punished for making a 1 minute mistake. The issue that some people have with the, the campus sexual assault violence elimination act, is that what it is?
The Violence Against Women's Act,
the one that's specific to campuses though. And that there's this controversy around, I think I wrote it down, there's this controversy around the language of what can be constituted as sexual violation or not, like forcible touching, and people having controversy around, well, what particular acts can be considered sexual violence versus what's not considered sexual violence. I think that oftentimes a lot of the sympathy for the perpetrators are embedded in those kind of conversations about what is considered sexual violence and what isn't. Forcible penetration, is that actually considered sexual violence? Or do you have to
There's
be
a question
pulled?
About that?
Yeah, like people debate that. Versus being pulled into an alley and being raped in some way, shape, or form. So these kinds of the murkiness.
Right.
That you see judges even grappling with the murkiness.
But, you know, with the murkiness, we can really clear that up if the only measure is, was there consent? Was there clear and enthusiastic consent? And I think we've always got to go back to that. Was there clear and enthusiastic consent? I think the caller really touched on the perfect victim question, who gets listened to and who whose stories are getting uplifted. And then she also, I just want to touch on that she mentioned this idea of victims who are exercise self-defense actually being punished instead of being supported. And that is a huge problem, especially for women of color.
Oh, yeah.
Let me get back to the phones here and also read this email that came in after our last program from Marianne. Rape culture Rape culture, the topic should have been an hour, but we'll be in it from here on in. It'll be an hour every program we do. Sexual harassment is almost a rite of passage for young women. For example, during an all-girls vacation, we friends began to share difficult memories. One by one, they all revealed the strange time when someone they knew took advantage of their innocence. Then it was my turn to speak, and I had escaped twice, once being pinned down by a fat man and a wall, and another time two men playing tennis pulled a strange off of me in a park. But that was enough to scare me. That was enough to make me aware that I was growing up and grown men were watching and would take my virginity. None of my lifelong friends would believe that I escaped the assaults. This is how pervasive the actions against women are.
Right.
Those threats are there to instill fear, right? And then we end up in these conversations about how people can protect themselves, which I'm still seeing with college orientations going on right now, that those messages about here's how you can avoid getting raped instead of here's how not to rape.
Right.
Those are still the conversations that we're having.
Exactly. Just like, what are you wearing? How are you wearing it? When were you there?
How
did
you
drink?
You
were you drinking too much? All of these conversations.
What I said to young man is, I don't care if you get sexually stimulated. Do not touch.
Right. What was that? that nail polish thing that came out a couple years ago?
There was nail polish where you could dip it into a drink to see if there was the date rape drug in it. Which, again, like the lengths that you must have had to go to invent that.
Let me try to get a quick call in here before the end of the hour. 410-319-8888. Charles, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Very good. Good morning.
I just wanted to mention to you guys real quick that they not mention much about men who have been raped. And I find sometimes they just give real brief lip service to it because there are lots of young men who have been raped. And because it's such a female issue, they don't need to speak up. And I always say this about it, and I'm going to shut up. Rape is a gift that keeps on giving. Mm. Can you hear me? I mean, you know, it seems that people who have been victims say they pass on the illness, and they also feel that their lives have been taken over by it. And for males, it is a big issue because they will not speak up. And I don't hear very much from your guests on that.
No, actually, we did say that earlier on the show.
Yeah. This is an actual conversation, a segment that we want to have. We're going to spend another hour in this rape culture series that's only specifically talking about how sexual violence is impacting men and what that manifests and what it means and how it's tied to a number of different inequities. This is a rape culture series conversation, and it's something that I feel extremely passionate about that we're going to make sure that we're highlighting in our next segment.
So, and this segment will continue. We're going to continue having these conversations on the air about rape culture and how pervasive it is. And I think that I think it's important to bring up the men's issue.
Oh yeah.
It's also important to think about the men's issue not in terms of it obfuscating the issue about women and others in our culture who rape has been that is commonplace every day.
Right.
I mean, because it can be used both ways. One, we have to understand it takes place. Mm-hmm. It took place in, as I said, close to my family, and it's very real. So, I don't want to obfuscate the issue. Sometimes it can be, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I do. And, we grapple with this all the time, doing like anti-sexual violence advocacy. It's like we want to center all of the stories, all of them. Last week, Hannah and I were doing a webinar. Is it okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we were doing a webinar for, you want to describe?
Yeah, it's the Army SHARP. So it's the Sexual Harassment Response Prevention Program for the U.S. Army.
Right. Mm-hmm. And one of the people that were on the webinar was talking about how hard it is to engage male survivors of sexual violence who are in the military in these healing practices that we are trying to put forth, like how that narrative gets obscured. And it's very complicated, especially when you have particular institutional cultures that promote a toxic masculinity and secrecy.
Right.
And then you have certain cultures that see, Like, how many times do I have to hear prison rape jokes as if that is something that should occur in a young man's life, as if that is a fitting punishment for doing any kind of crime, no matter how heinous? Or how many times we hear people raving, young men being praised for having lost their virginity at age 12 or 11, and the person they had sex with was 18 years old. That's not a rite of passage. That's rape. So these are very real issues that need to be addressed, that are just as institutionalized, just as a part of rape culture as everything that we discuss.
There's one more resource I just want to mention, 1 in 6, specifically for male survivors.
So this has been a great conversation. Well, we'll continue this. We're going to continue this conversation. We're going to get deeper and deeper into it. I want to thank Hannah Brancato for joining us, artist, activist, co-founder of Force Upsetting Rape Culture, professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and, of course, Kalima Young, co-host and guest host here on the Mark Steiner Show, instructor at Towson University and the University of Maryland College Park. Thank you both for being here.
Thanks for having us, Mark.
And thank you all for writing in and calling in and making the show what it is. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our senior producer is Mark Gunnery. Our producer is Imani Spence. Our engineer is Andrea Melton. And on the work today, Ty Rice, who is getting the job done. Our interns are Morgan Barber and Calvin Perry. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org. To podcast the Mark Steiner Show and share it with your friends, visit us on the web at steinershow.org or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And also, I want you to support the Rise of Trump City. We want to keep that on the air and go to their – they are seeking funding, and we're going to continue to support their work here on WEAA and the Mark Steiner Show. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.